How's it going, everybody? It is 10:30 Friday morning, and it's time for another trip down the homeward path. Even though I'm not driving anywhere today, I thought it would be safer to record at the house given the nature of this episode. So, for those of you who don't know, this is the show by me and MTG Dad for all of you at home who are playing Magic the way that I am on a budget, time, financial, otherwise. This is the show where magic is your passion, it's your hobby, it's your escape, more so than it is your attempt to be a livelihood. And that's what we're about. I like to think it comes through in how I talk, what I talk about. But we're doing something special this week. I don't do these super often, but every once in a while I just like to get the audience engaged, and I like to send out I do a mailbag episode, so I ask all of you to send in questions. And when we send in questions, I want to answer them on record, if you will, and then go from there. So we got a few to work with. That's good. I'm not going to do while we were away this week, because there's quite a few questions and I want to make sure I get to all of them. Oh, goodness. It has been a long week, everybody. I am so sorry for those of you who follow me on social media. I have been just dead this week. Work has been brutal. We've brought in a lot of new people into a factory that we just, like, we're having to get everybody trained. I'm having to kind of pick up slack for other people. We've had a lot of people out. It's just been absolutely brutal, and I am so sorry if you follow and were expecting more of a presence this week, or if you're worried because I'm not posting as much as normal. Like, I'm so sorry if that's the case. Anyway, before we get into the mailbag, we have to thank the people who make the show possible. It begins with the network at constructivecriticism.com, and when I like to give you an idea of how I feel about them, Ryan Sachs on Twitter made the comments that I'm looking for podcasts other than Pro Points and Limited Resources and Lords of Limited. What do I need to, anybody have any recommendations? And I recommended everybody else on the network first. And then at the end I said, and if you want dad jokes and bad beat stories, you can come listen to me. So I really mean it when I say it. They are cream of the crop, some of the best online. And if you are not listening to the content on this network, aside from myself, I'm not going to say the other content. I'm going to say aside from myself, I'm the other content. So if you're not listening to the rest of the content on this network, I don't know what you're doing with yourself. But what you can go do with yourself is check out our sponsor over at inkgaming.com. Use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout. Get 10% off your order. Get all the sweet stuff to deck out your play space. I am seriously contemplating getting an inked playmat made with the show logo on it. I don't know. Maybe it's something I get around to doing. Maybe it's not. I haven't decided yet. But we'll get there. I'm also kind of... there's a lot of stuff going on. Anyway, if you want to support the show directly, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. The show will always be free, but brain non-functional. Show will always be free, but if you feel like you are getting enough back out of the show that you want to donate and help me improve it over time, I would gladly accept it and make sure it gets put to good use. I mean, the only patron money that I have spent so far was on the splitter that allowed me to record the episode with Nick in the car so that we could both be on this, not have to pass the microphone back and forth. And it allowed us to kind of record organically. I'm not sure what the next patron goal is as far as like what it's going toward. I just, there's a few things I'd like to do, but logistically speaking, maybe they don't work very well. Things like a camera mount in the car. I don't know how I feel about that, because it's, 3 months out of the year, it's dark when I'm driving home, and the rest of the time, like you would get to see the lovely grays of the Tennessee countryside because it's overcast at least 60% of the time during the spring, and then it's just like searing, blinding light the rest of the year. So I don't know how y'all feel about that. That's something we'll have to get around to. As far as the actual patron rewards, I have set up the patron Discord, and then I am open to suggestion on the other rewards, but for now, the patron Discord has been set up. I'm going to go through and do a little bit of shifting around today while I've got just me and Abel here at home. If you do hear any noise in the background, it's just Abel running around the house watching TV. It's going to be fine. We'll be fine. So without any further ado, let's get into it this week because it's my 30th episode. I didn't know that I'd ever make it this far. I struggle with self-confidence issues. I always feel like everything I'm doing is not worth the amount of time and effort that I'm putting into it. Like I put in all kinds of time and effort into something and it just like, I always feel like it never comes out the way I want it to. So to make it to 30 episodes without Spencer and the gang looking at me going, "Hey, go back to your blog, get off my website," that I words cannot express how thankful I am for that. So I wanted to drive an audience engagement this week, and I wanted to make sure I wanted to talk to you about what you wanted to talk about. So let's get everything. Let's get the first round of questions pulled up. Let's get everything pulled up here. There we go. So, first one is from @SparkyMTG, Robert Anthony Jr., who asks two questions. Says, how do you feel about Standard? And then, what is your favorite deck? And what do you feel is the best deck in the format? So, that's like three questions in one, and I dig it. So, we're going to start with how do I feel about Standard? And I've done a couple of episodes on this at this point, but it's worth reiterating because it's still true. I think this Standard ranks as one of the best I've ever played. And this is from someone who started in Champions of Kamigawa, the right on the heels, like right at the end of Mirrodin's run in Standard. Like the bannings had already happened by the time I started playing Standard. And then right after I finally kind of got my foothold, started to figure out how Standard deck construction sort of kind of worked, we rotated and went into original Ravnica, and that was the first Standard format I really played, was Ravnica Kamigawa 9th edition. So it, you know, that one's always going to have a little bit of a special place in my heart, but this one is right on up there with it. Other ones that I've played that were notable in terms of like historically relevant Standard formats, I played during the Fairies Standard format. Ravnica Time Spiral 10th edition, highly underrated, or not 10th edition, Ravnica Time Spiral Cold Snap 9th edition, highly underrated. I cannot stress that enough. That was one of the more interesting Standard formats I ever played, just because the combination of pretty good mana in a format with, it was good mana, but it wasn't painless mana because the sets of lands we had were shock lands and pain lands. And then eventually in Future Sight, we got the like one of each cycle where we got like the Dreadship Reef and Horizon Canopy and Graven Cairns and all of those, where we got like the future shifted ones. But for the most part, the mana was driven by shock lands, pain lands, storage lands. Like, so it was good mana, but it wasn't risk-free mana, and that made the format really interesting because like it just, there was a lot of things that were viable. There was a true Drago control deck, and I mean that in every sense of the word, in Mystical Teachings, which is one of the first Standard decks I ever really, it was like the second or third Standard deck I ever sat down and used a list from the web as inspiration to build mine. And it was one of the longest time periods I ever played a single deck in Standard until I came back to the game in 2016. Like, it just absolutely fantastic format. But this one ranks on up there with it for a lot of the same reasons, if I'm being honest. There's a lot of the same reasons why I like this format that I liked all of those other ones. The mana's good, but it's not pain-free. We, you know, shocks checks. It can be painless, but there's some sacrifice you have to make in doing so. You know, you play more of your lands tapped, you take turns off to fit tap lands into your mana curve, all those little things. A lot of different archetypes are viable. There's a lot of things you can do. There's almost a feel for the format that has a little bit of that modern edge to it, where you can just kind of play something you're really comfortable with. And as long as you know how your deck works and how you line up against the rest of the format and how you sideboard, you can be successful. It almost doesn't matter what you play. Obviously, it does matter to an extent. But as long as what you're playing lines up reasonably well and you know how to pilot it well against what you're expecting, like, it's fine. And that's a good that's the healthiest possible place for a standard format to be. What is my favorite deck? Well, I mean, I played it at Memphis. So, Mono Blue Tempo. I am a sucker for a good aggro control deck where you combine really cheap, proactive creature strategy with disruptive interaction. So, like, some of the decks that I've ever played that I enjoyed the most, going back, I love going back to look at what we got going on now. One of the first decks I ever built that really followed this paradigm was Scribbin Force during Time Spiral Ravnica Cold Snap 9th Edition format. And it was more a green mid-range deck that just happened to play some counter spells. But there was enough kind of interaction on my opponent's turn that it made the deck really intriguing. Script Ranger and Plax Manta both were flash creatures. We had access to actual hard removal in blue in the form of Psionic Blast. You could just kill four toughness creatures for 3 mana. Or, you know, point it at their head to do the last few points of damage. It was a versatile spell. Remand was in standard, in a standard format we had just come out of, where all the control decks were interested in tapping out for their big plays in the middle of the game. The Mystical Teachings deck had not yet taken off. There were variations on a lot of things going on. Boros deck wins was really good. Dragonstorm was one of the better decks in the format, and being kind of an aggressive shell with some disruption in it was really where you wanted to be in that matchup. But, you know, it was really my first experience with the delicate balance of being aggressive, but at the same time being able to keep your opponent from stopping you from being aggressive. And it's kind of a feeling that I've always really enjoyed playing Magic, and it's never really changed. The only reason I never got into fairies is because I realized too late after they came out, like, what they were about, and I just never had the capital to invest. For those who don't remember, like, Scion of Una, Mistbind and Click were both like $5 cards in standard. Secluded Glen was a $10 land in standard. And then Bitter Blossom was like a $40 enchantment in standard. So I never got to a point where I had that to spare, and I ended up just kind of playing around with a bunch of other stuff during Lorwyn standard. During Callblade standard, I played a lot of Callblade on Magic Online. I did not have Jace the Mind Sculptor, but I had literally everything else for the deck on there. And Jace Bellerin did a reasonable job filling in as far as the mid-game card advantage went. You know, the most important facet was being the blue-white control the blue-white tap-out control deck that just happened to have these two drops that would snowball and run away and hide with the game if your opponent couldn't deal with them. That was kind of the gist of a lot of these decks so far. And then, you know, I of course stopped playing Magic right before we got the penultimate tempo control, you know, tempo deck in Delver. That was when I took my break. So I missed out on Delver, and I missed out on like Mono Blue Devotion, and I missed out on a bunch of stuff like that. And then when I came back, I got to experiment a little bit with Blue White Flash before they banned Copter and Reflector Mage. And then, you know, fast forward to Teemer, and I was playing kind of this package in my sideboard where I could sideboard into kind of a tempo deck in Teemer Energy. And then we're to today, because shortly after Tamer Energy got banned, I just kind of got into the stuff for the Mono Blue deck because I really like Curious Obsession. And what it is that draws me to this deck is just the idea that the way you play is more important than what you play in the deck. And that's something that really, really gets me where I live when it comes to my Magic experience. I love the fact that how I leverage my cards is more important than what cards I am leveraging in my deck construction. And that's that, you know, that's something I've always kind of been a big fan of, is making sure I know how to play my cards to the best of their ability, and often better than how my opponents perceive that I'm going to play them. You know, taking a risky line, because you know if things line up in a certain way, you know, a lot of times if your opponent sees you take that risky line, they might be more interested in committing to something that might be a mistake because they think you don't have something. You know, a little, not really a Jedi mind trick so much as it is just kind of next leveling your opponent. And we all love feeling really smart, right? As far as what I think the best deck in the format is, the least worst deck in the format, I'll put it this way, the least worst deck in the format, just on, in terms of raw card power level, you know, not necessarily bound by how you leverage your cards, is probably still Sultai Midrange. There is still some amount that needs to be done in terms of, you know, making sure you know how you're leveraging your cards. And it's the deck that you can configure and customize in a way to beat nearly anything. But an honorable mention has to go out to Simic Nexus, which outside of a mono blue matchup that is not great, you can kind of play your way through any matchup with that deck too. And I don't know, there's just a lot going on in the standard format. There's a lot of stuff. And we're getting ready to turn it on its head here in a couple of months when we get War of the Spark with its 36 Planeswalkers. And, you know, I'm starting to sound like an old man on my front porch telling kids to get off my lawn. I start talking about how planes, you know, having that many Planeswalkers in standard will fundamentally shift things, but you never know, right? So, yeah. So, Sparky, I love this standard format. My favorite deck is the Blue Tempo Shell. I'm currently, like, kind of playing around with different iterations of it with splash colors to maybe help fix some of the holes and push some of its medium positive matchups into a really positive territory. Right now, experimenting with black mana for discard and hard removal in the form of cast down. And right now it's Price of Fame, but it's probably wrong. Gonna have to play it some more to find out. I don't like Vraska's Contempt in this shell because I don't think we should ever have to leave up 4 mana and not be representing multiple spells at the same time. Vraska's Contempt is not Cryptic Command. So, you know, that's kind of my thing. If I'm leaving 4 mana up for something in a deck like this, it needs to be something that's as good as Cryptic Command. And then what I feel is the best deck in the format is just the one that you can build to have the least worst matchups. And I think that honor belongs to Sultai Midrange. I don't like saying that out loud because that deck's really expensive and I'm kind of, you know, fiscal responsibility model over here, but it is what it is. So that's all from Twitter. Let's go to Facebook, where Hunter Smith from the LGS says, what's your take on the upcoming time frame or the upcoming stretch for Modern? Any expectations for bannings? Any ideas on how they'll deal with Phoenix? Okay. First of all, my take on the upcoming time for Modern, as ridiculous as Modern feels right now, and it kind of feels ridiculous with it being, you know, Dredge, Phoenix, and everybody else right now, I don't have any expectations for bannings ahead of the Mythic Championship in London because they're getting ready to test the new Mulligan rule. And specifically for London, they wanted to, you know, they did it for a Modern Mythic Championship. And they wanted to make sure that this Mythic Championship was going to be a stress test of this mulligan rule. They wanted to see just how bad it can be in the hands of the best players in the world with all the incentive in the world to actually just break the thing in half. And if you ban all the most unfair decks that are currently viable in the format, you can't stress test the mulligan rule. So as far as how they'll deal with Phoenix or, you know, Dredge or any of these other decks, the other thing to wait on is we have Modern Horizons coming out in the summer. The thing about Modern is it's a long game, or it's a long time, big picture view decision-making process. Because not only do they have the Mythic Championship with the updated mulligan rule to potentially shake things up in the format, maybe even change deck construction fundamentally, but we also will have Modern Horizons on the way. Modern Horizons is a big deal. 200 plus cards entering the format that have not been in the format before. Now, there's plenty of people who are going on a wish list and speculating what they'd like to have. The only thing I know we have as far as effects that we have in Legacy that we will be getting into Modern Horizons is we know we're getting a powered down Cabal Therapy in the form of Cabal Therapist. Now, weaker Cabal Therapy is still pretty good in my opinion, but it sounds like a cop-out answer, Hunter. I know it does, but I just don't know. I think they're doing the right thing here and saying, wait and see. Let's find out. Let's be sure. Then we'll do something about it. I don't like knee-jerk reactions to stuff in this game because, as I've said several times, we are not Yu-Gi-Oh! Magic is not Yu-Gi-Oh! I played that game for about 3 years, trying to kind of compete, and the frustration with getting into a deck, realizing it was really, really good, and then enough players realizing it was just actually fundamentally broken and complaining until it got banned. We don't need that in Magic. We really, really don't. You know, for all the talk last year after the Temur Energy banning of, you know, banning the Scarab God or banning Hazoret, and look how the format turned out after they rotated. Or not after they rotated, but after we got Dominaria to shake things up. Well, then it was like, well, we need to ban Chain Whirler. Well, no, we don't. Well, we need to ban Hazoret and Chandra. No, we don't. They're going to rotate in a few months. Just be patient. It's the same thing here. Just be patient, Hunter. And until then, make sure you got your graveyard hate with you. If you don't like the fact that Phoenix and Dredge are dominating because it means people are playing more graveyard hate against the Hollow Ones that you've been playing, I don't really know what to tell you. That's just kind of how Modern goes. The fact of the matter is, even at their most popular, very rarely will a deck in Modern take up more than about 15 to 20% of the metagame as a share. And that's a sign of a healthy format, even if it's a little bit fundamentally broken in terms of how it's, you know, kind of laid out. You know, you have your litmus test of decks you've got to make sure you're ready for. So, you know, that's kind of what I have to say there. Now we move over to Discord, and I've got a couple. First, let's go down here. Episode topics. In the Homeward Pathfinders, the Homeward Path Patron Pathfinders is what I named the Discord. We have our one patron is Kevin McGrath. And he's got a few. Kevin has got a few. So I wanted to save, you know, a lot of the questions for last. So we're going to do the message I got this morning. And forgive me if I can't remember. I don't remember if I ever got your name, but your handle on the Discord, it's the same. It's the from the Constructed Criticism, the Easy Game Media Discord, is Zeramus EG. And the question was asked, for your mailbag episode, I was wondering when you decide to update a list you've been playing with and how you decide how and what to change out. Okay. So when I'm because I end up playing decks for a long time now, instead of trying to play them, you know, switch decks all the time, again, money's tight, kind of hard to come up with ideas and ways to, you know, play this game in a way that kind of helps pay for itself when you end up having to pivot a lot. And especially in a standard format where we have Shocklands, and while the deck that won the first Mythic Championship was only about $75, the most popular deck in the format behind it is like $500 or $600. That's just not money I have laying around, obviously. So changing decks is kind of a big deal, even just tuning the list you're working on. So there's two reasons I tend to update a list that I've been playing with. You know, if I've been playing with it for more than just a little while and I'm deciding to make changes, there's one of two things happening. Either the format has shifted and what I'm doing is not working, or I feel like the deck has got some legs and I'm just trying some stuff out to see if I can get it to line up better with what it's bad against. A really good example of that is the mono blue, the tempo shell. So a lot of what I've been running into with the deck is that it tends to struggle against wide creature decks and decks that can outclass it in the mid game if they can get you to burn your counter spells. And there are two things I'm trying out in the current iteration and splashing black into the deck. One of them is playing discard, which is ways to interact with the opponent's spells without them having to be on the stack. I can know what my opponent is up to. I gain information. Information is really valuable in a deck like this. When you know what to play around and what your opponent's trying to play toward, you can make much better decisions. Instead of having to guess, you can just know. And then hard removal deals much more elegantly with cards like Shalai, Voice of Plenty, or Lyra Dawnbringer, or Spawn of Mayhem, these big, nasty flying creatures that make your life miserable. Or, you know, Crawl Harpooners and just, you know, a lot of these creatures that make life difficult on you. Now, is it going to fix the vulnerability to things like Shock? No, but the discard helps with that. That's my thing, is once I figure out kind of a chief vulnerability, I sometimes will kind of tinker and play around with something to maybe see if I can lessen the burden without changing how it interacts with the rest of the format. Like, I don't want to gain some ground in a matchup that I'm already not favored in exchange for losing matchup value that I've got everywhere else. I would rather stay about the same and then have some different tools to fight with. And the more I play with this blue-black shell, the more I like it, but I'm still kind of trying to get my numbers right. It was something I did with Teemer Energy all the way up from, I guess it was June or July, before we lost Battle for Zendikar, all the way up until, you know, Rogue Refiner and Attune with Aether got banned. I tinkered with that deck forever. When I first put it together, it was just kind of stock Teemer Energy. And then the more I played with it, the more I kind of wanted a bigger mid game than what everybody else was doing. Well, then we rotated, and a lot of the cards that I was using to generate that bigger mid game rotated out of standard. Well, that made me have to pivot and change. You know, obviously format rotation forces you to change your decks if they're still even legal at all. But I again started with a fairly stock list, and then the more I played, the more I started experimenting. And that's just kind of the way I am. I don't really have like a set schedule for when I do stuff. I don't like play so many games or play so many matches. I operate a lot on gut feeling. I operate a lot on like how something plays and how I feel like it plays. And that is probably to my detriment a lot of the time. Because I put a little bit too much stock in my gut feeling as, someone who has never day two'd a GP and never ever won a PPTQ and only ever played in one of them, and is counting Grand Prix Memphis, I am 4-7. So I am 4-10 at events that run more than 5 rounds long. Just, you know. Consider your source in this one. But I'm kind of a fly by the seat of my pants guy, because for me, the experience of the game and kind of learning new stuff is what keeps me coming back. And I like tinkering, and that's probably not to my benefit. Just bear that in mind. But as far as deciding what to swap out, I try to identify pretty early on what the core cards are to the archetype that I'm working on. And then a lot of my variation comes in the flex slots. So like with the mono blue shell, cards like Charter Course, cards like, you know, the non-Wizards Retort counter spells and interaction, those are what I consider the flex slots. You can play around with those numbers. You can make them whatever you want to. And then, of course, the 19 or 20 lands, the 20th land is almost a flex slot, right? But especially if we get the London Mulligan rule, we can definitely call the 20th land and possibly even the 19th land a flex slot. But we'll get there. Just all the way around, it's a fly by the seat of my pants thing. I don't really have a system or organization for changing stuff. I just like, this card feels bad, I'm going to try this one. Well, it feels bad too, let's try this one. Right now, one of the other draws to black for the tempo shell, for example, was Tempest Gen feels really good when you're ahead, but just about any three drop that is reasonable would feel really good when you're ahead, any evasive three drop. So I want something that can actively, you know, Tempest Gen closes the door really quick. It, you know, makes it harder for your opponent to race because you have this big blunt instrument in play. But I kind of have an unhealthy affection with the card Thief of Sanity. So I play that. That's what I play in the three drop slot with the black splash in the deck, because it allows me to feel a little bit better about cutting Charter Course to play discard spells in the main deck. Right now, that discard spell is Drill Bit. It will probably become Duress after War of the Spark, or after I play some more games and, you know, don't consistently have a spectacle for it. So it's just actually coercion, and that's probably not very good. But it's a deck I have not been able to get put together on Arena, which is the reason I keep saying I need to play it more. I play it as much as I can in paper, you know, test matches against Sarah, the odd trip up to Gooses, but I don't get to play it as much as I'd like to because dad life. I got stuff that comes up. If I've got to go to the shop, it means Sarah's got to be here with the kids by herself, or, Sarah's going to come with me. We got to get somebody to watch the kids. And it's just, there's a lot that goes into getting me to the game shop. So, as far as the short version for you, how do I decide I want to change something? Either the format changes in a way that I have to, or the more I play it, the more I realize there's stuff I don't like. You know, there's these cards that just don't feel very good. And those are the ones I'm going to play around with. Those are, you know, that's how I decide what to come out and what to go in with. I tend to value cards on the basis of like what they're doing, what their role in the deck is. So when I'm boarding out, when I decide to make the cut on Charter Course, it's because I'm playing Thief of Sanity, which is another card that will generate advantage for me. When I decide to trim on stuff, like I trim down to two dive down, two spell pierce, and again, no Charter Course, in order to make room for the Drill Bits, which can proactively take their removal spells away from them and proactively take away the creatures that are going to come down and trump what I'm trying to do. And it's, you know, trying to find cards that fill similar roles, but in a different way, maybe. That's kind of my approach, if I have one. So I hope that kind of clears that up. I know it's a long, convoluted mess of ways to not really say anything. And then finally, we get around to the largest number of questions from the same person, and it's our patron, Kevin McGrath. First question says, hardest part for you when it comes to making budget choices for cards, do you prioritize the budget cards on a large scale or take the most expensive one to find the budget versions? So, when it comes to making budget choices for cards, I tend to make the decision in a really weird way. And it's, I can't remember if I've actually done an episode on this network about this before. I know I did on the blog post a long time ago, but when I updated everything to kind of set the stage and do my first in the format that I use on the network, I deleted it, and you know, I wanted to save that as a back pocket topic for later to do a full episode on. It may be something I do before long, but the idea is when I make budget choices for cards, for example, right now in Standard, my favorite deck is Blue Black Tempo, but I'm still trying out some other stuff. I've got Mono Red, I've got Gates. Obviously, both of those decks are super cheap. But then I also have Temur Reclamation. So there's two things that go into me making a decision to splurge on something if I have the capital. One, I have the capital either by doing a trade order or by just, you know, trading a bunch of cards locally and getting into some stuff. And there's two questions I ask myself. The first is, how much better a finish does this deck give me? And the second is, how long do I get to play it? So, you know, obviously when we're talking about formats like Modern, Legacy, Pauper, the answer for how long do I get to play it is technically forever. Excuse me. It was 60 degrees outside last night, and it is 42 degrees outside right now, and my body is coping. Anyway, so one of the stories I like to tell in terms of making this kind of an evaluation is what happened when the Scarab God's price spiked. It was right after Ixalan had come out. I had traded into a couple of copies of it. I traded into one when I went to see Brett in South Carolina back in the spring. It was right after Hour of Devastation came out. End of July. And then we played the store championships in August, and I loaned my friend Jared my copy of the Temur Energy deck, and he ended up taking down Hour of Devastation game day. So, as a token of his gratitude for, you know, giving him such a good deck and kind of walking him through not just the kind of basic play patterns, but letting him test it and get a feel for it and, you know, really feel comfortable with it before we went and played, and putting him in a position to succeed the way that he did, he decided he was just going to give me a copy of the Scarab God because I had expressed interest in building a commander deck with it. Now, moving into Ixalan Standard, I had the entire Temur Energy deck. And I had the Scarab God. Would make sense to just play Temur Black, right? Well, that's what I was thinking I was going to do. And then the Jessup's Sultai Energy deck took down the first Star City Open of the season. And Scarab God's price went from about 15, 20 bucks, which is something I can reasonably hang on to. I can get that much value out of a card by playing it, to $50 a copy. I'm exaggerating, but not by much. It went up to about 45, 46 bucks. Now, I had two copies of the card. I primarily play local events. Usually FNM or Standard Showdown, or, you know, if I'm free for store championship day, you know, something along those lines, that's the events that I play. If those are the only events I play, what is the average finish I'm going to have in order to pay off those cards? I treat it almost like a loan, right? You know, how am I going to pay off this card? And in the case of Scarab God, yes, I already had it, but what's better for me? The two Scarab Gods, or $90 worth of capital, because I had found a vendor who was willing to give me full value for the card in trade credit. So I am literally looking $90 in the face and saying, do I really want this? The correct answer is yes for me. It may not be for you, but that's how I kind of valued my cards. I said, how long is it going to take for me to make $90 in value back if I don't trade this in? Like, how am I going to get $90 worth of cards if I don't trade this in? How long am I going to have to play it? And the answer to that would have been all the way through the entire format. Because, you know, it turned out I did not end up getting to play a whole lot of Magic that year. Part of it was what happened at Memphis, and it would have gotten lost in my deck if I'd had it with me at Memphis. That was what happened to me at Memphis of 2018, as I ended up losing my deck there, and that would have really stuck in my craw if I'd had Scarab Gods in it. It was bad enough that I had the Fetid Pulls and Vraska's Contempts and Search for Iskantas in the deck, but not having Scarab God ease that blow a little bit and made it a little bit more feasible for me when I just pivoted and started playing mono red again. But that's how I decide budget evaluation of a card. If it's something I feel like I can get its value out of based on how much longer I have left to play with it, then I'll keep it. And that's where I am on Team of Reclamation right now. Niv-Mizzet going to be in standard for a whole nother year. That card's really good. Wilderness Reclamation, if it doesn't get banned, is actually just insane. And lands are always a good investment, and that is literally everything I have spent building that deck. Everything else is, you know, common uncommons that I've either gotten out of the draft chaff box or traded for, or gotten in trade orders before for other decks, and I just ended up having them. And it's a deck that I really like. And it's, you know, I have a long time to try to pay off the value of those cards that I'm keeping that in rather than trading them in. And that's kind of the mindset that I have. I treat cards that I'm keeping as almost a loan. And however long it takes me to pay those things back, that's what I, you know, that's where I value my budget. How long is it going to take me to raise the amount of capital I could get for these cards right now? And if that number suddenly, you know, that capital suddenly skyrockets, and I don't know how long it's going to hold that, I'm just going to go ahead and get out of it and get into something else. And it creates kind of this weird tension sometimes. Like the mono blue deck, part of the reason I got out of the deck is I'm not sure how I'm definitely not going to get to play it after October in its current form. We're not going to have Curious Obsession. We're not going to have Miscloaked Herald. We're not going to have Siren Storm Tamer. We're not going to have Wizard's Retort. You know, a good chunk of the fundamental core cards of the tempo deck are not going to be in standard after rotation. Now, we've still got a long time to wait for that. It is March. We've got 7 months for that, right? But like I said a couple of weeks ago, it's like being that football team that comes out with a short lead in the third quarter and you decide to start pounding the ball. It's not that you're trying to focus everything around making sure you've got the clock on your side, but it never hurts to stay ahead of it. And that's been my mindset since I started playing again, because one of the things that really finally burned me out the last time I was playing competitively is I got burned really hard by a format rotation where I had gotten a lot of stuff and I'd gotten a lot of decks and all of it rotated out of standard. And I did not stay on top of it. And that was what ticked me off to the point. That was like what finally set me over the edge. I said, I'm done with this. And I didn't want to put myself in that situation again. So that's the answer to that question. The second question, my thoughts on Legacy and the use of non-sanctioned proxy events to keep the format valid in shops. Legacy is a weird format for me, okay? Because there's so many cards that you need in order to just like exist in the format. Like you gotta have your lands, you gotta have your format staples. Obviously the reserve list is an issue. But more than that, it's just this really weird format, and I just have not played enough Legacy to like have the kind of affinity or utter disdain for it that a lot of people do. I fall on neither side of the polarized debate when it comes to Legacy. You know, let's get that out of the way. None of that really bothers me too much one way or the other. But I think proxy events are probably fine. I think proxy events are probably going to be just fine. And my son is asking me to turn his show back on. So, yeah, proxy events I think are just fine. I don't think they're going to hurt anything as long as the numbers are like reasonable. Obviously, you don't want people showing up to a tournament with a 60 proxy deck and You don't want them showing up to a tournament with a 60 proxy deck and just, you know, getting after it with something they don't have any cards for. But, you know, like the old vintage proxy tournaments where you could show up and play with 10 proxies, I think that's probably fine. You know, it's a lot easier to build something like, let's say, Perfect Storm or Doomsday when you don't have to buy, you know, those last 10 cards that are just way outside your price range. So, like, as much as I obviously don't like the idea a ton, just because, you know, if a format is pricing itself out of existence, I'm of the opinion that you don't need to try to prop it up by artificially fixing it. If there's a passion and there's a demand for those kinds of tournaments and they, you know, they can make your LGS some extra cash, bring it to them. You know, you got enough people that are going to show up on a regular basis. It's really hard to turn down free money as a business owner. The next question from Kevin says, what do you think are the worst aspects of Arena and how do you think they should be fixed, if at all? The biggest issue I have with Arena, the two biggest issues I have with Arena are connection and the way the timing system works, the timer fuse. And a lot of that stems from the issue that Nexus caused on the program. So connection is an issue I think that is probably not related specifically to Arena. I just have not experienced it on any other game I've played on my computer. But the high frame rate and just, you know, overall high quality of Arena, coupled with my computer's age and my cheap 30 megabit per second internet speed, probably are more to blame for the connection issues than are, you know, the servers that are at Wizards themselves. And then the other problem is the timer fuse as it relates specifically to Nexus of Fate, because I don't think you should be able to, if you don't have a way to win, like if your opponent figures out how to take away your win condition, it should not be possible for you to just sit there and waste 3 hours of everybody's time with the card. Like, you can't actually kill them, but you're going to sit here and spin your wheels until your opponent decides they're done, like, wasting their time on planet Earth and going home. Yeah, I have a healthy amount of respect for choosing a deck you think is right in the field. And if you think that deck is Nexus, by all means, do you, you know, take care of your stuff. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is when you've lost your way to win the game and you decide to just abuse a system that should not function the way it does. That's where my line is drawn. Now, this stems a little bit from the Shaheen Sarani stream, but I mean, even before Nexus was banned in Best of One, I had people try to do it to me too. I would answer the win condition and they would Nexus for like 15 turns, couldn't figure out a way to win the game, couldn't find a way to win the game, and I would just get tired of it and leave. And at some point it should be, you know, the nice thing about doing it in paper versus doing it on Arena is it can be demonstrated that you're going to do it. You know, the actions take a little bit less time. And, you know, there's at least the round timer to kind of light a fire under them. Where in Arena, you don't really have that. You just have the turn fuse. And you can run that all the way down. And then you can just keep going. Because as long as you cast a Nexus, you're going to get another turn. Which means you get a whole nother turn fuse to burn down while you're trying to find all your stuff. Again, I don't know that there's anything they can do about it until Nexus rotates. And I think that's probably fine. As much as I'd like things to be done about things I don't like, I don't have to have it. I can just adjust according to it. They did a really good thing in banning Nexus in Best of One. I think it's still fine for Best of Three. Even though I don't like playing against it on Arena, I think it's still fine. And, you know, that's pretty much all for that one. And then last but not least, Kevin asks, what accessories do you find necessary to take with you to events? And do you feel it's worth spending a bit extra on these items, even if looking at budget concerns? So when I go, the last event I went to was the Grand Prix, the last big event I went to, I should say, was the Grand Prix of Memphis, Magic Fest Memphis, if you will, or as it became known for a little while on Twitter, GP Jackhammer. What I took with me is I took the deck I was going to play, the possible backup deck. I had lists made out for both of them just in case. The playmat I was going to play with, and I have a small, it was purchased from an outlet mall in the town that I work in, and it came with a tie and set of cufflinks, and it was like $5, but the box is really cool, so that's where I keep all my dice. And then pad of paper, ink pen, and I've consolidated everything down into a trade binder. And when I say a trade binder, this is the biggest thing for me when it comes to a trade binder. If I'm putting it in this binder, if I'm taking the time out of my life to put these cards in this binder, it means I don't want them anymore. And if I'm putting them in there, that means everything in my binder is for trade. So it speeds up the process when we sit down to trade with people, right? And those are the only cards I'm bringing with me. I could have very easily tried to put together a modern deck and bring that, you know, bring my commander stuff, bring everything with me. That's what I did last year at Memphis. And I'm super glad I didn't do it this year because such a load off not having to carry that giant heavy backpack everywhere this year. You know, last year it was two binders and playmat and like five standard decks and three commander decks and all this other stuff I had going on, and another box with bulk rares that maybe somebody might need. And it was just a load off to carry a little bit less. And then the last thing I did, in almost a direct response to your question about, is it worth it to spend on these, even considering budget, knowing how tournament structure works, as soon as I got there, I sought out a good place to get sleeves. Because I wanted to make sure I got a good pack of sleeves, but I also wanted to make sure I had new sleeves for the Grand Prix. And it is always worthwhile to make sure your cards cannot be deemed marked and will be protected from the wearer of playing them. It's always a good investment. Sleeves are always a good investment. Anytime I have an opportunity to pick up a pack of sleeves, I'm going to. Because I always need more. I always have cards. Whether it's getting a pack of like cheapy Ultra Pro generics to use to put valuable cards in the binder, or if it's just getting what I did at Memphis, where the Legion Events vendor booth was there, so I ended up getting two packs of the 100 count brick sleeves, which are like their answer to Dragon Shield mats. And I love Dragon Shield mats. Bear in mind, I'm not sponsored by either of these people. Not by Dragon Shield, not by Legion. I use both pretty regularly. I don't use Ultra Pro if I can help it, but that's just because I've had too many Ultra Pro sleeves split on me since I started playing again. But I digress. Like, there's a lot that goes into building your set of accessories, right? And then, as far as my playmat that I use was a gift from my wife after I lost the one that I'd had literally forever. I'm talking back to when I was living in North Dakota. I bought this playmat after World Wake released, and I'd had it since then, and it had Luis Scott Vargas's signature on it. Like, it was my baby. And it was with my deck box wherever it was I left it at that Grand Prix in Memphis in 2018. And Sarah went online and found this mat and ordered it for me. So I am like, even if I end up, you know, getting a mat made with the show logo on it, I'm never getting rid of this mat because it's special. As far as, you know, budget concerns, there was a really sweet deal going on at one of the vendor booths at Memphis this year where if you traded in or spent $20, so if you sold or spent $20 worth of cards, they would just give you a playmat. That's a real good way to save some money. You know, choosing the Legion brick sleeves over the Dragon Shields wasn't an issue of quality. I think both of them are fine. I think both of them are great. But the bricks were $2 cheaper that weekend. And I'm all for saving $4 because I got two packs. I got one for the tournament and then one more as a backup set for later. I haven't even opened them yet. Plastic's still on the box. But, you know, accessories, it's easy to go overboard, but things like sleeves and play mats, you can find deals. You got to know where to look. And then, you know, there are a lot of sites out there who will give you just reasonable prices on a lot of this stuff. Sometimes you can get custom play mats. Cool Stuff Inc. once upon a time had custom play mats that were really cool arts, but were cheaper than like the actual Ultra Pro art ones. And, you know, that's something we've invested in on a couple of occasions. We got a couple of those that were like $5-6 instead of being like 20. So, you know, we were happy doing that. It's just kind of the same thing I used to say when we were playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And everybody was just enamored with the spellbook mats or I can't remember the name of them now, but I think they were spellbook mats anyway. And they were really, really thin, but like really smooth playing surface. My mat still plays the same. My cards still play the same regardless of what that mat looks like. So you just find the one you like or find the one you're the most comfortable paying the price with and go from there. Like it's like the debate in Magic about whether or not to foil out your deck. Your cards still play the same, even if they're not pretty. It's the same thing. Just as long as they're well protected, they can't be deemed as marked, and you got what you need. That's my thoughts on the matter anyway. I like repurposing things I got for other reasons as my Magic accessories, like I did with the box that Ty came in. You know, that became a really cool, unique dice box because it's got the lid of it folds up and down and it's got the Ty pattern on it. And also I can just keep a lot of dice in that box. Plus everybody takes a Crown Royal bag, right? Like basically everybody has a Crown Royal bag for dice. Anyway, that's going to wrap up the mailbag. I think I've rambled on long enough. Do I have another one? Did I just get another one? I did. In the Homeward Pathfinders, I got the Facebook group. I got a question from Brandon Wheeler. Says, so now that you're done with Memphis, what are your Magic goals right now? What formats are you playing? What decks? So Magic goals right now are to play as much as I can, understand as many different formats as I can, and be able to make informed decisions based on the things that I'm doing. So, like, I'm not, you know, I said earlier in the year my goals were to play more Magic, play more meaningful Magic, and experience Magic at the highest level. So I am definitely achieving the goal of playing more Magic thanks to Arena. I'm definitely playing more meaningful Magic because even like the seemingly random pickup games with Sarah, they are being done with a purpose. Like right now we are testing the London Mulligan rule in Pauper. It's easy to test it in Standard because it's not going to be broken there, but testing it in a more of an Eternal format that's a little bit more powerful, you know, something we got to do. So, you know, just the little random pickup games at home are something that I'm doing with a purpose, playing Magic with a purpose. And then, you know, I experienced I got my first taste of hyper-competitive Magic, and I felt like maybe I'm not as bad as I thought I was, even though my record says I am. Because unlike in football, you are not what your record says you are in Magic all the time. You may be having a bad weekend, but you can always play better. Cards can go, cards can flow in a different manner. It's not a case where, you know, teams don't get blown out by the ball bouncing one way. But you can get blown out by keeping a reasonable hand and then the cards just not flowing right. So, you know, in regards to that question, my goals right now are to just continue playing as much Magic as I can experiment, tinker, and just basically try to be a resource to the people that are close to me, both in person and here in this community around the show, that need to use me as a resource. I want to be as valuable a resource as I can to the people around me that have more meaningful magic goals than what I do right now. Formats that I'm playing standard, pauper, commander, and maybe modern. I kind of lost a little bit of my appetite for the format as it became way faster. I still have a deck that I can play, but I'm not like really heavily invested into modern emotionally right now. And I mean, if it really came down to it, if we had to play a really big event, Nick has basically every modern deck, so I can borrow. What decks I'm playing in standard, I'm playing blue black tempo, Tamer Reclamation, mono red, and Guild Gates in some spread. I also have the framework for Is It Drake, green black midrange on Arena, and what else do I have on there? White Weenie on Arena. In Pauper, it is Blue-Black Delver Exhume or Is It Blitz. For me, Sarah is playing a mono-black shell that she threw together. And then in Commander, I have Kes Dissident Mage as a Spellslinger deck that just kind of wins the game by playing a whole bunch of stuff and figuring out a way that that can turn into a way to win the game. And I have Prosh Skyraider of Care, kind of generic mid-rangey. It's got like elements of Voltron, elements of tokens, and elements of, you know, sack value. Still kind of trying to figure out which lane I want to ride in with that deck. Projects I'm working on are in Commander, basically. In Modern, I've got a blue-red prowess deck that I'm cool with. It's not like super powerful or anything, but it's pretty good, pretty fun. Steals wins against big decks every once in a while. The project for Modern right now is I've got to make a decision. I got to decide if I want to stay on the kind of Grixis fast mid-range. Like, I've got everything for Grixis Shadow except Snapcasters and Death Shadows. And unfortunately, those are the most expensive cards in the deck that I don't have. You know, snaps are not cheap, neither are shadows. So I'm probably going to get out of the Grixis shell, but I also really like having access to Thoughtseize and Inquisition in Modern right now. Although, given that Phoenix and Dredge are the top decks, I don't know how much that actually matters. There's the temptation to trade out of the Thoughtseize Inquisition and all the black stuff and just go ahead and get in wholesale into Phoenix. But I don't know what's happening with the ban list here in a few months. Like, I don't want to go all the way in on that and then have to turn around and sell it back again. It's just a weird spot to be in. So Modern is just kind of a weird spot right now. And then for Commander, the next two projects are going to be Combal Council of Allocation, which is going to be something that will get me killed a lot. But the one time it works is going to be worth it. And then Yuriko, the Moonshadow, I think it is. Anyway, maybe the Night Shadow, life of me, I can't remember the full name of the card, but it's, you know, Commander Ninjutsu. I never have to pay more than 2 mana for my commander. And I get to drain the whole table. I get to do a reverse Dark Confidant where I get to draw extra cards, but everybody else loses the life. So I'm in for that. So again, that's going to wrap up the mailbag segment. Sorry. Lying to everybody and such. That's going to wrap up that segment. Thanks for listening to all of that. If you want to get in touch with the show, let's remember how to English for a minute. Oh, goodness. Twitter's fun sometimes. If you want to reach me on the show, you can do so on Twitter. My name is @HomewardPathMTG. You can do so on Facebook. My name is Adam Spain. You can join the conversation in the Facebook group, the Homeward Pathfinders. If you are a patron of the show, you will be granted access to the Patron Pathfinders Discord. That's a new reward. I am going to, as soon as I get done recording this episode and uploading, B, changing that to automatically send out as soon as you become a patron. You will get the link to that Discord where we can have, you know, conversations about episode topics and things of that nature. You know, the people who are supporting the show need to have the supporting the show financially need to have the biggest input in what goes into it. So, you know, that's why I try to do these engagement segments and, you know, all this stuff, because I want to know what you get. I want to know what all of you want. You know, long and short of it, I want to know what you want. And what I want right now is to set up my favorite segment each week. And that is hashtag MTG dad joke. Sorry, I'm like right at the end of it. I'm on airplane mode and I'm still getting messages. excuse me. Sorry. Let's start here. I feel like I did that last week. Did I? Probably didn't. Begins with a tweet from Brian DeMar, says, nothing makes me happier than sideboarding Gatebreaker Ram in my Gates combo deck on Arena. Who's the bleat down now? Tarmogoyf out of the board, a tactic as old as time. Spiral block constructed. I laughed entirely too much at that. And then we have from at turn one thoughts. He says, I am building a new deck with Psionic Blast, Terramander, Death Shadow, and Char. It is the beginning of a new archetype. I am calling Charmander. Thank you for coming to my press conference. I will not be taking questions at this time, nor should you. That is gold. And I kind of want to try it. Am I a horrible person for wanting to try this deck? Feel like I might be. Maybe it's just my affinity for Char and Psionic Blast, having played with them when they were in Standard. I don't know. Also, Terramander, too strong. WotC, please don't ban. I love that card. Next but not least, or next is Mark Rosewater, Tales from the Pit, number 1996. And the art is the Hammer of Bogarden, and it says, if only the Bogarden Hardware Store ever had any nails in stock. And that's it. The only other instance of the hashtag MTG dad jokes was me recommending the rest of the shows to Ryan Sachs. So that's going to wrap up this week, everybody. Thanks for listening. I'm not just dead sure. Maybe next week may just be kind of feedback on trying out this London Mulligan and maybe just a little bit of, you know, gained insight for Pauper. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Until then, thanks for listening. I look forward to feedback. Please, if you want to say something about the show that you think will improve it, do not hesitate to do so. I always want to hear from you. Good or bad, preferably good, obviously, because I like feeling better about myself. But if it's something that I need to fix, let me know. I can't fix it if I don't know. And all that out of the way, thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Go forth and find your own path.